Today's daf is daf Pei Gimel, the beginning of the ninth paragraph of Ksubis. The Mishnah begins saying, "Hakosev liishto din v'dvarim ein li b'nichsech hareza ochel peiros b'chaya." So the halacha is that if the husband, writes to his wife that din v'dvarim, the halacha and things, any matters that have to do with your property, I have nothing to do with ein li, I have nothing to do with it. The halacha is hareza ochel peiros b'chaya. He's still allowed to eat fruit while she's alive. It's talking about the nichse mulug. Nichse mulug, the wife owns, but the husband eats the fruit. So even though he says, I have nothing to do with your land, he's permitted to eat from the fruit. V'im mesa, if she dies, yorsha, he's also going to inherit her property. So it asks the Mishnah itself, im kein lama kasav la din v'dorm ein li b'nichsech. So what was the purpose? Was it effective at all that he said, I have nothing to do with your property? He eats the fruit, and he is able to be yorish her after she dies. So the Mishnah tells us it works for a very small case of she'im amachav v'nasakayim. If she decides to sell her property, or if she decides to give her property away, that stands and he has no rights to hold back. Normally, he's able to hold back because he has rights to the peiros, his kin and peiros. But in this situation, he's given up his right for a future peiros. The current peiros, he's allowed to continue to eat and enjoy, but this lashon of din v'dorm ein li b'nichsech tells her that she's allowed to sell and give it away, and he has no ability to prevent and block the sale. Then the Mishnah says, "Kasav ladin v'dorm ein li b'nichsech u'b'peirosein." He adds this time, he writes to her, "I have nothing to do with your property, and also nothing to do with your fruit." Hareza einu ochel peiros b'chaya. Since he adds on the word peiros, he now has removed himself from eating any of the fruit from her property. V'meisa yorsha. But if she does die, he is able to inherit her. And also, I would imagine, if she sells it, it's a good sale. But the addition of peirosein tells us that he cannot even eat the fruit during her lifetime. Rabbi Yehuda omer liolam ochel peiros. He's allowed to eat the fruit and the fruit of the fruits. The Gemara is going to explain what that means exactly. He's not removed from this at all. Ad sheyichtov la din v'dvarim ein li b'nichsech u'b'peirosein u'b'peirei peirosein ad olam. It's not until he writes that lashon that he's completely removed himself from the property. But if he writes anything other than that, it sounds like he's allowed to continue to eat from the peiros of the land. Letei writes, kasav la din v'dvarim ein li b'nichsech u'b'peirosein u'b'peirei peirosein. If he adds that on, b'chayecha u'v'mosecha, during your life and during your after your death, then the lacha says the Mishnah is eino ocha peiros b'chaya. He cannot only eat the fruit during the during her life, but also v'meis, if she dies, the lacha is eino yarsha, he doesn't inherit her either. So that added peirosein b'chaya, sorry, the added b'mosecha tells us that even after death, he's not yarisher. Comes along Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer im Mesa Yershana. Not true. In this last case, even though he had removed himself from her property even after death, it doesn't work. He would still be Yorisher. Why? Bipnei Shemosna al Mashkasa b'Torah. A very famous line that's used throughout Shas. He made a condition. He stipulated something that was given in the Torah. You can't go against the Torah. Anybody who makes a stipulation that goes against the Torah, the condition is the batal doesn't count. So even though he removed himself from inheriting her, he's going to be removed. That tonight won't be chal. And Rashi explains, because there's a big machlokas in the Gemara Baba Basra, whether Yerushas HaBaal, when a husband inherits from his wife, is that a din deraisa, din derabanan. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is of the opinion that it's a din deraisa, that a husband's yorish his wife on a deraisa level, and he cannot stipulate against that din deraisa, as opposed to the Tanakhama says that the husband inherits his wife only on a dirabanan level, and that one can make a tanai to say, I do not want to inherit my wife, since it's only a din dirabanan. Okay, a lot going on in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to analyze each of these stages. So first, the Gemara says, "Tani Rabbi Chiya." Rabbi Chiya taught us in the Braisa, "Ha'omer liishto." Person says to his wife, even though our Mishnah actually says "Hakosev," it really meant to say "Ha'omer." If he says any of those words, the lachas would be true. So if he says to his wife, "I have nothing to do with your property," the lach is that she's allowed to sell and give it away, according to the first part of the Mishnah. It's "Ha'omer," not "Hakosev." So the Gemara asks, "V'chi kasev la hachi mai have?" And if she writes it, let's say, so you're telling me the Mishnah is all about if she says it. What would the halacha be if she writes it? It wouldn't work if she writes it. But how Tanya, doesn't the Braisa tell us? The question really is, how does a Ha'omer work? Saying shouldn't be effective, only writing should be effective. How could Tanya B'chia say the Mishnah is talking about saying? We have a Braisa of a Ha'tanya Ha'omer L'chaver, or someone says to his friend, Din V'dvar Mainly Alsa Dezu, Vainly Esek Ba, V'yodai Misulak Esek Manu Lo Marklum. A guy says to his friend, this field of mine, I'm stepping back. I have nothing to do with this anymore. I'm nothing to do with this business anymore. I'm removing myself from this field. Any of those languages, lo omar klum, doesn't work. So we see amira, a person is not allowed to remove himself from through amira. So just like that case by a guy not removing himself from the field through amira doesn't work, so to the Mishnah, if you interpret a Mishnah to be talking about a ha'omer, person can't say to his wife, I have nothing to do with the fruit and the land, I have nothing to do with the selling of the land. That's not going to work. Amira doesn't work when it comes to a matana, giving something away. You need to write it out, actually. So the Gemara explains, no, our Mishnah is different. So Amre Debe Rabbianai Bekosev La V'Oda Arusa. You're right. Our Mishnah is actually a situation where he wrote it down, and it was while she was in Arusa. Ukid Rabbi Kahana, the Gemara continues, just like the opinion of Rav Kahana, the Amr of Kahana, Nachla Haba La Adam Mimakam Acher, if there's a nachla comes from elsewhere, a person could make a stipulation to avoid inheriting it. So what's going on here? So Rashi explains all this. Rashi says, "Bekosiv lava oda arusa." He writes to his wife while engaged, his kala while they're engaged only. Rashi explains, "Vaday mishe hakarka shelo." Certainly, someone whose land is theirs, ubalitno lechaver, wants to give it to his friends, tzarech lashon matana. You have to use a proper lashon of matana. Umasnisin bekosiv la ad shelo zacha v'nichasim umasnaim shelo yizake behem lechshishena v'in tzarech lashon matana shereein lo achshav rishis behem. So if I'm giving something to somebody, I have to say, I'm giving it to you. I can't say, I'm removing my ownership from it, and it mainly becomes yours. That doesn't work by matana. I have to say, I'm giving you the field. I'm giving you the present. But when it comes to our Mishnah, it's talking about a situation where she, the Kala, has not yet received the Yerusha. So he's preempting the receiving of it. So when it comes to preempting the receiving of the matana, then you can use, I have nothing to do with this. I'm removing myself from the picture. But they're both situations of ksiva, where you're writing it, but you don't need as strong of a lashon as giving it. You could simply say removing one's ownership, relinquishing one's ownership from it. And the Mishnah explains, the Rashi explains further, Mimakam acher she'ena yerushas avosav elade maisav tavolo, that the yerusha of his fathers only comes through an action. The fact that he's going to inherit his wife only comes about through an action, through marriage. So we saw above that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel thought that a husband is yorish his wife midiraisa. But the rest of the mission, the Tanakhama felt that a husband only is inheriting his wife on a dirabana level. It was a special takana that the husband, that the chachamim gave to the husband, a special right that he had. But he could always be mocha on takana dirabana. So the situation is, they're engaged, and he says at the outset, any Yerusha that may come through you, I don't want to inherit it. So he's being mocha on the takana of rabbanan, that he has the rights to normally inherit her. He's being mocha on that. And since it's only preemptive, he doesn't have to use a strong lashon of matana. He could simply say, misalik himself, I have nothing to do with it anymore. That's sufficient to accomplish this preemptive, blockage of receiving the Yerusha through this takana of the rabbanan. So the Gemara says, yeah.
It hasn't said anything yet. Like, why would he do this? He's not waiving any other right of supporting her by doing any of this.
That is true. What the motivation would be, I'm not sure. I guess the Gemara just telling us this is something he can do, and we're learning what's able to be done, not that it necessarily would be advisable to do, and there would be a good reason to it. So the Gemara continues to say further that also this is like Uchad Rava, just like Rava says, the Amar Rava, Ha'omer EFSHI, a person says, EFG, I'm impossible, I don't want to have anything to do with this takana. We listen to him, he's allowed to always opt out from a takana derabanan. You could opt out. So what's kigonzu? What's the prime example of a takana a person may want to or may opt out of? Kidravhuna Amarav, Amaravun, Amarav, Yechola Isha Sheteamar Baila. She could say to her husband, Eini Nizones Veini Ose. I am not going to be fed by you. I'm not going to do any work for you. I'm going to be completely self-sufficient. So the only reason why we gave her mizonos, the chachamim gave her mizonos, was for her own benefit. And the ma'ase yadav connected that to her husband. This is all for her benefit. But if she preferred to be off on her own, she's certainly allowed to. So just like that person that exists, so too the husband's right to inherit his wife was a takana rabbanan for the sake of the husband. If he wants to opt out for whatever reason he thinks, he's always allowed to opt out. And since it's opting out to preempt any yusher coming in, it's enough to simply say the lashon of silik, I'm removing myself from the situation, that suffices as opposed to having to use a strong lashon of a matana, giving it over. So the Gemara says now, if this is the understanding of the Mishnah, yihach yafilu nisunami. So even in the case of marriage, when they're married, why is the answer only when they're engaged, barusa? Even b'nisuin, the husband should say, any Yerusha that you may come, you might get sometime down the line, I'm going to pull myself out of it right now. I'm waiving that right now. Why dafka case of erusin? Even by the case of nisuin, this halacha should be true as well. So explains the Gemara, Amar Bai nisu yado ki yada. Because once they're married, his hand is like her hand, they have equal strengths, and he's no longer allowed to waive that right. It comes, I guess, mimela. Right, Rashi explains, this is five medium wide lines down in Rashi. This is the fifth line, the last word is yado. Yado ki yada. His hand is like her hand once they're married. Varehu kishote behen, their partners. V'cheven shenechasim shalo, now the property is his. Tzarech lashon matana, vein moel ba lashon din v'dvarm. He now, once they're full partners, he has to use lashon matana, a stronger language, and it's not enough to say just waive his rights. It has to be where I'm giving his rights up. And that's why it doesn't work anymore. And that's Ravan, that's a buy. And Ravan takes a step further. Amar yado adifa miyado. Actually, they're not equal. His hand is greater. He has greater ownership of his property than she does. And that's why it's simply waiving the rights doesn't work. You have to use a strong lashon of matana. So they both agree when they get married, you can't waive your rights. You have to give a matana. But they do argue conceptually what the strengths of each person's ownership is. According to Abaye, they have equal ownership, and Rava thinks that he, the husband, has greater ownership of the property. So Gemara says, what's the nafkamina between these two, whether his hand is equal or his hand is greater? Nafkamina lishomeres yavam. As Rashi talks about this whole case, not too complicated, but let's say there's certain properties that when the first husband dies and they're left childless, so now the widow has this fall, she's Shomer's Yavam, and she's up to being married by the Yavam, the brother-in-law. So now there's certain properties that came in that they shared ownership to that. There was a, let's say, Nichse Mulug. So the Nichse Mulug, which was owned by the initial husband, and now owned, and also partially owned by the wife. So first, the first husband dies. Then before Shomer's Yavam ever does Yibum or Chalitza, the Shomer's Yavam dies. But she had the potential to go to a new husband, to the Yavam, but she also had the potential to go back to her own house. So when she dies, who's going to inherit her? Is it going to be her family that inherits her, her father, or will it be the potential Yavam to marry her? There's that split. So the Gemara explains that, according to the opinion who thinks Yado v'Yada, that the initial marriage, the husband and the initial wife, those two, had equal share in the properties, then it's after she dies, it's going to be split evenly through her own family, her father, and through her husband's family, since they have equal share, yado ki yado. But if it's that the husband had greater ownership than she did, and she ends up, he dies, and then she dies before doing Yibum or Chalitza, then his family, the first husband's family, has a greater chelek than her family, because yado is odif miyada, his hand is greater. So that's the nafkamina between these two positions of Rava versus Abaya. Okay, the Gemara now on the towards the bottom, a few lines up, asks, Ibailu. Kana miyado maho. What's the halacha if they do a kinyan sudar? It's a chalipin, like what we do for selling chametz. You pick up the pen, the kinyan sudar. Kinyan sudar literally means a handkerchief, but anything, you just pick something up and you make a real kinyan on it. Is that going to change anything? So Rashi explains in the situation of the Braisa, where a person says, Din Divaram Ainli Al Sadazu, where a person removes his, he relinquishes his ownership to this field, it doesn't work. We said it only works by the Mishnah, where he's preempting the coming of the Yerusha. He's waiving that right to come. Then you're allowed to remove yourself from that. Once you own something, you can't remove yourself from that. But let's say a person says, I'm removing myself, and here's a kinyan sudar. In addition to that, he gives a kinyan sudar. Now, will that kinyan sudar strengthen his words now and make it a good handing over to his friend? So the Gemara explains, I think actually Rashi speaks this out nicely. Does Rashi say this? Let's see. You see Rashi, three lines up from the bottom, Mahu. Mi amrinan lo hikna b'chalipin halalu klum. Maybe this chalipin doesn't work at all, v'lo amar le el lashon din v'dram. Even though he uses lashon, even though he does a chalipin, it doesn't work because he's strengthening the words. His words of, I'm being masalik myself from the field to you, those words aren't effective. So the fact that I do a kinin on those words is not going to change anything because those words are not words of matana. O Dilma, or perhaps Rashi explains the other side is, Ein chalipin bom elo ledavar sheish bomamish, shezeh kones asudar, makna lochevet tamachar amatana, v'gufa shakarka karnam yado, umatana gemuri. Even though he says the words are ineffective, once he also does the kinyan sudar, the chalipin is not there to strengthen his words anymore, the chalipin stands independently now, and it's there to actually be makna the karka over to his friend. And we ignore the words that he said as being nothing, but his kinyan stands alone and says the kinyan in general does work and will be good on the karka, and will be make the matana a good matana. So this kanam yado, again, the kinyan sudar, going to change anything or not? So according to Amar Rav Yosef says, Midin v'dvarm kan miyado. Kan miyado is simply strengthening the words of din v'dvarm. They're saying, din v'dvarm ainli b'sadazu, I'm removing myself from the field. The kinyan sudar is just attempting to strengthen those words, but are ineffective because those words don't mean anything. But Rav Nachman argues and says, Amar migufa shakarka kan miyado. No. The kinyan sudar is not there to strengthen his words. The kinyan sudar stands independent, and it's going directly onto the karka, and will make the matana an effective matana. Machlokas of Yosef and Rav Nachman. So last line of the Amud, Amar Abaye says, Mistavra milsud Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef seems to be more logical to me, who says that the kinyan miyado is going on the words, and therefore it does make an ineffective matana. So I think his words make sense in the situation of Be'orer, aval be'omen megufo shakarka kan miyado. What's the case? So Rashi explains the top line, Pei Gimel Amud Beis, Be'orer, kishabach haver zeh lahachzik b'chelko miyado, b'chelko. So I have a land, and a friend comes along and tries to take hold of my property. Omad ze'irar al matana. I quickly jumped up and said, the moment he came to protest that it's his, I said, what do you mean? It's not yours. V'amar lo nasad ilcha el esasadeh. V'din dvaram ba'ama amart ilcha shlo ariv imcha. I wasn't attempting to give it to you. It wasn't meant to be a matan at all. I just wanted to say that I didn't want to have to deal with you in this case. I didn't want to fight with you about this at all. I'm not dealing with the situation at all. There's no fight here. But it wasn't a way to be given to you as a matana. So if that's a situation where he right away responds that way, so then we know he never gave it over as a matana. But Rashi explains the next case of Al Ba'omid, Yomo Yumayim, if a day or two passes, V'charkach Irar, Lo, Lo. And then he protests, it doesn't work. The Hashcha, who the Kahadar Be, V'lamdu to Tumkach. We're concerned is, the guy comes to claim my land on Sunday. I don't respond, I don't jump up and attack him. Wednesday, I come along and say, no, when I said, Ainli Dvaram B'nichsech, Ainli Esik B'diyadcha B'sadazu, that was not a lashon matana. That was just meant I didn't want to fight with you about anything like that. So if it's a delayed reaction, delayed response to justify why he said ein li v'dvarim basic pesadik zu, that delayed reaction tells us that he probably learned from someone. He looked into the halacha and had thought of a good taina, a good claim. So he thinks Rav Yosef is talking when Rav Yosef says doing a kinyan sudar on those words are ineffective is only when the guy immediately protests that it's not the guy's land who's claiming it from him. But if a few days take before he responds, then he thinks that it was a good siluk, it was a good kinyan, if it's accompanied by a kinyan sudar. What's the halacha? Amar Meimar, Meimar explains, Hilchasa megufa shakarka kanam yado. If a person does do a kinyan sudar on these words, then it will be a good kinyan in line with Rav Nachman. So Amalei Rav Ashi, wants to understand this psak la meimar be'orer or be'omed. So when he says that it's going to be the halacha that kinyan miyada works on megufo, is it only a situation? Will it even work be'orer if right away the guy says, "Wait a second, I never gave it to you"? Are we still saying still too bad if there's a kinyan miyada, even though you protested right away, it's going to be a good kinyan? Oh, but Omid, or only if his response was a few days later, only then is it a good kinyan, the initial kinyan was good. But if he immediately responds and says, "No, I never gave it to you, I only was telling you I don't want to fight with you at all," and maybe in that case, the lach would be that it doesn't go to the, it was not a good matana. The Mai Nafkamina, the Lachad Rav Yosef, according to Rav Yosef, according to Rav Nachman, across the board is a good kinyan. But within the world of Rav Yosef, there's Rav Yosef willing to say, even by kinyan, even by Be'orer, so Amalei lo shmili kolmar lo sirli. I don't hold that way. I didn't hear this. I never heard that. I don't hold that. That's halacha, which means what? So which means that I think across the board the halacha is that whenever there's a kinyan suder, even though the words are weak, that he says ainli asik b'sadasu. Once it's a kinyan suder, then it's a good acquisition in every scenario, whether or not there's an orer right away, or whether or not it's be'omid where he waits a few days before actually responding. Okay, the Gemara now quotes from the Mishnah, Imkein Lamach Kasav Lavachule. The Mishnah was telling us that if the husband says to his wife that I have nothing to do with your property, the halacha is he's still allowed to eat the fruit. And if his wife dies, he inherits his wife. So ask the Mishnah, was anything affected by him saying, Ein li dvarim b'nichzech? And to that, the Mishnah says, yes, that if she sells it or gives away the property, he's not allowed to block that sale because he said, Ein li b'nichzech. V'teimalei mikol milei slikas nafshech. So why not? Maybe when he says, Ein li dimidvarim b'nichzech, maybe he really means, I have nothing to do with all your property. I can't eat from the fruit and I cannot get Yerusha. Why are we limiting it only to a situation of selling and giving it away? It sounds like if I asked any person, what does it mean, Ein li dvarim b'nichzech, I would think it means he's completely removing himself from every aspect of the property. So why is the Mishnah limiting it to only a situation where she gives it away? So explains Abaye, Amar Abaye, Yad Baal Hashtar Atachtonim. The hand of the one who owns the shtar, who owns the document, he has, on the lower hand, he has a, it's to his disadvantage. So in essence what it's saying is, we have to always interpret this shtar in a way that is very limited at the disadvantage of the one holding the shtar, unless it's explicit. Did Rashi explain this? Right, so if you see Rashi explains three narrow lines down, Yad Bal Hashtar Al HaTachtona, the one who is holding on to the shtar, he always has the disadvantage unless it's explained explicitly. So it says, Rashi kol motzi shtar al muchzak. The guy takes a shtar out on someone who's taking from my property. The davar mashim beforesh b'shtar yachol tvalav. Only that which is explicit in the document could he claim from the guy using the property. Vim hashash sasim, if it's hidden, it's closed, it's ambiguous. Moridin osol lefchos shimim mashmos hashtar. We have to take it down to the least amount, whatever is the least amount implied in the shtar. The kanabal ba betakanas chachamim al nichsei ishto b'shlosh dvarim. Now the husband comes with the permission of chachamim on his wife's property for three aspects: leachol peros, to eat from the fruit; v'liyarish, to inherit her; v'mtimkor melchor batal, and if she attempts to sell, it's not a good sale. Those are the three benefits, rights that he has on her property. V'zumotzi ala v'shtar shekasafta li dim v'dvarim ein li b'shnechasachich. Minichsach, and she takes out a document that my husband wrote to me that he has no rights, no nothing to do with my property. And he removed himself, he relinquished any rights. He's able to say, yeah, I removed myself. I only removed myself from the least amount, the least valuable part of this this land, which is selling. But as long as it's not sold, I'm still allowed to get fruit from this. So Gemara is going to explain why the selling is the least valuable part of this property. But that's how we always interpret it. Whenever it's ambiguous, we interpret the shtar to the least amount possible. So the Gemara says, so why are we saying from sell? Maybe he removed himself from getting any fruit from her property. Amar Bai says, a botsini tav mikra. It's talking about a situation of a delas ketana, like a small gourd, I guess. Gourd, it says, right? Right. So a small gourd. I'm not getting the mashal here, but the fruit is better to him, it's more frequent and common than the possibility of her maybe selling. What's this mashal of the gourd?
Well, there's a small gourd on the ground. You can cut it now and take it now, or you can wait till it grows and you can take it later.
Uh-huh. Say rather the right now, the short term. Uh-huh. Okay, so that's why he did not opt out of the fruit. The fruit, the immediate hana is better than having to wait till she sells it. And then the Gemara says, Eima Meyusha, so maybe he's going to opt out from the third aspect that he has, the third right, which is from the Yerusha. So Amar Abaye explains here, Misa Shchicha Mechir Lo Shchicha. Because death is common, selling is not common. So when V'chi Mesalik Inish Nafshem, a person removes himself from something, he removes himself from something uncommon. It's unlikely that she's going to die, or rather she's going to sell. Women don't really sell, they're not involved in business so much, so I'll remove myself from that aspect, from the selling of it. But from something that's more common, that people die, that's something that happens, he's not removing himself from that. So again, a person does not remove himself from something common. Therefore, he does not remove himself from Yerusha. He does not remove himself from the Peros, since that's the immediate Hana. Rather, what he's removing himself from, the Nichseich means he's removing himself from, if she sells it, it's a good sale, which is the most unlikely circumstance. No. It's not because we have this klal of yado shel bala tachtona. It's because the way we interpret the language of the shar. The shar should be nichsayach. Nichsayach means from the property, not from the fruit. Peros are called peros, not called nichasim. So that's why fruit is not part of the shar. But nichsayach in your property, but not after you die. After you die, it's no longer your property anymore, only while you're alive. So therefore, by understanding the language here, it's clear that's referring to the selling of the property while she's alive. Now the Gemara wants to analyze the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Le'olam hu ocha per peros. The person is allowed to eat all the fruit in the world until he writes an extensive language here of, let's get that language again. He says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Le'olam ocha per peros, ad shiichtav lo din v'dorm ein li b'nechseichu b'perosein b'peros perosein ad olam. That's the language necessary for him to remove himself from eating any of the fruit. So the Gemara wants to understand, quotes of Rice, the Tanner Abanon, Elu pein peros, Elohin per peros. What's considered fruit? Derivatives. What's considered derivatives from derivatives? Hechnisa lo karka. If she brings in a property for him, the nichse malug v'asus aperos, and it produces fruit, harezu peros. Hare and peros. Those are fruit. Machar peros. If he sells the fruit, v'lokach mem karka, then takes the proceeds of the sale and buys property, v'asus aperos, and that second property now is producing fruit, Hirei, hain, peyapers. That's considered fruits, derivatives of derivatives. Okay, those are just giving us terms. So, Ibarilu, the Rabbi Yehuda, peyapers dafka, odima o dafka, odima tarvayo dafka. So, Rabbi Yehuda had a lot to say there. He said, peyapers, he also says adolam, so what does he mean? Do you have to say, is it enough to say peyapers without having to say adolam, and that removes himself from any fruit? Or could he simply say adolam, not having to say anything about peros, and adolam would imply fruit, no fruits? Or does he have to say both peros and adolam, and only through that will he completely remove himself from eating any fruit? So im tim shlomer, if you want to say peros dafka adolam lomali, if it only means peros, so what's the need for adolam? What's the question there? The question, why does the Mishnah teach Adolam? If really it's sufficient to say Peiros, Ainli Dvaram be Peiros, and then he's removed himself from fruit, so why is the Mishnah, why is it Behuda say Adolam? What is the need for that? So the Gemara says, Hakamashulan, this comes to tell us that Afagav, the Kasav Le, Peiros, E Kasav Le Adolam in Ilolo. That tells us that you need both languages, they're both Dafka. You need to write Peiros and Adolam for the husband to remove himself completely from the fruit. So the Gemara asks further, Avim Tomar, if that's true, Tarvayo Dafka, that you need to say both them, Tartilomali. So why do you need both then? Why do you have to say both Peiros, which sounds like I have nothing to do with the fruits forever. And Adolam also says forever. Why do you need to use both languages? It seems superfluous. So the Gemara explains to you, you need both languages. D cost of late peri-peris, if you only said peri-peris, velo cost of the Adolam, but you don't say Adolam. Hava, I mean, I would have thought peri-peris hu de lo achil, ava peri-peri-peris achil. I would think the fruits of the fruits of the fruits. So that would be a case where the husband takes the fruit from his nichsem lug, sells it, buys land. That land produces fruits. He sells those other fruits, buys another property, and then gets fruit from that final property. That would be the third level fruits. In that case, maybe he would be allowed to only pay pairs, only the second derivative, but not the third derivative. That's why he needs to say, therefore you have to write Adolam to say forever, cannot get fruits forever from any of the properties, any of the derivatives. The cost of the Adolam, if it only says Adolam, below cost of the pay pairs, but does not mention the fruits, have a mina liolam a peros kai lachi tzrich pay pairs. I would think it's referring to the first fruits. The fruits from the first land he cannot get any enough from Adolam forever. But maybe periperos and beyond, then he would be allowed to get Hanah from those fruit. Kamashalan, Periperos, and Adolam are necessary to teach me that he cannot get fruits at all from the current land, nor can he get fruit from the second land that he may buy, nor from the third, and so on and so forth. Then the Gemara asks, Ibailu, Kasav La Din Vidvar, mainly Vinich Sayach, Ube Periperos Maho. So let's say he writes, according to Behuda, I guess. According to Tanakama.
So there's another related inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question is, he writes, I have nothing to do with your property. Ube periperis, he says. Maoshiocha peros. He removes himself, he doesn't say adolam. He just says the second derivative of fruits, but doesn't mention the first one. So what's the halacha there? Maoshiocha peros. Does he remove himself only from the second derivative of fruits, but mipeir lo salak nafshe, but the first level he's allowed to still eat? Or maybe he removes himself from any fruits that are generated from this property. Pshita de mikol mili salak nafshe, it's obvious to the Gemara that he removed himself from all fruits. Why? If you're going to think that he only removed himself from the second derivative of fruits, but not the first level, so if he's allowed to get hanah from the first fruits and he eats them, so how are you ever going to get second level fruits? It will never be shaykh, not going to even be a relevant case. So from the very fact that he asserted himself, forbid himself, removed himself from the second level fruits, must be that he mimela removed himself from the first level fruits, because you can't get the second level fruits unless you don't eat the first level fruits. So it must be he cannot eat even the first level fruits. So the Gemara says, "L'tameich, according to your reasoning, Hadetznan, that Mishnah which tells Rabbi Yehuda Omer Liolam Hu Ochel Peir Peres V'chulei, that a person can eat the fruits of the fruits. Now, Kevin Da'achlinu LePeir Peir Peres Mehecha. What's that question there? The case Rabbi Huda says that in a certain language the husband may use, he removed himself from the first level fruits, but has not removed himself from the second level fruits. So the Gemara asks, how can that be possible? That if the wife has full rights to the fruits, the first level fruits, so the wife's eating all the fruits, how could there ever be a situation of there to be second level fruits? If she's eating all of them, there can never be second level fruits. So Gemara gives an obvious answer. Ella midishire. It's a case where she left over fruit. She didn't finish all the fruit. So whatever leftover fruit, he couldn't eat the leftover fruit, but he had the right to sell the leftover fruit to get second level fruit. So here too, ahachanami midishire. Here too is a situation where he left over fruit, and from the leftover fruit, you're able to produce second level fruits. Okay, what time is it? Wow, it's early. 6:40. We're going to the next stuff. I don't think there's a stopping point there until later on. Maybe we should call it an early day then. All right, not too hard of a daf at all, but it was very technical. Okay, well, quick daf, 35 minutes.